we must be mad. Literally mad as a nation to be permitting the annual inflow of some 50,000 dependents who are for the most part the material of the future growth of the immigrant descended population. It is like watching a nation busily engaged in heaping up its own funeral pyre.
Hi, I'm Olivia. The clip you just heard is taken from a famous speech about immigration by politician Enoch Powell. The speech was made in 1968 to a Conservative Party meeting in Birmingham as a response to the proposed race relations bill. It articulated popular fears about the impact of Commonwealth migration on the Indigenous British population. Powell proposed the voluntary re-emigration of non-white immigrants already settled in England. His sentiments were shared by many British voters, and the impact of his words was felt in the increased violence and hostility towards immigrant groups which followed. My podcast, Not Really British, will explore British reactions to the presence of South Asian migrants throughout the 1970s and 80s. Given that our current Prime Minister, Rishi Sunak, is of Indian descent, many Brits might argue that South Asians have been well and truly accepted into British society. However, there has been a long history of Asian people within this country being needed to sustain services like the NHS, but not necessarily wanted, because their cultural and racial differences have been seen as a threat to the homogeneity of the white British population. This has resulted in many members of Asian communities being treated as not properly British. Today, I'll be speaking to my mum, who came to England from Sri Lanka in 1974, about her experiences growing up in Britain and the obstacles of racism and cultural ignorance that she and her parents faced. I hope that by presenting my mum's experiences alongside the political current which shaped them, you'll be able to think about how deeply the lives and identities of migrant groups are impacted by political discourse. 3 years after Powell's speech, my grandfather, who was living in Sri Lanka at the time, responded to a call sent out by the British National Health Service to aspiring medical professionals. Since the NHS's formation in 1948, it had heavily relied on migrant workers to sustain its services. After gaining his diploma in public health on a scholarship, my grandfather moved to Britain with my grandma to permanently settle. My mum, still a young child, followed shortly after. The experience of adjusting to life in Britain proved difficult, as she describes.
When I came to Britain as a young child, I was 5 years old. I couldn't speak any English, so I felt really alienated. And on top of that, I was pulled in and out of junior school due to my dad's job. He had a series of short stints, starting in Cornwall and ending in Birmingham. So this was all really disruptive. And on top of that, it was a time when open racism was still rife. In the schools I went to, Asian kids were constantly referred to with the P word or as a wog. Boys would chant wogs out of Britain and laugh about it. I remember sitting in the back of a car and my dad having an altercation with another driver who shouted the P word at him. So, you see, language like this was at the end of people's tongues and there was no shame associated with using it. It wasn't supposed to be a multicultural society as we know today. It was much more hostile, and it was much more a case of, well, these foreigners are here in our country, and when are they going to go back? They're here, but they're not necessarily welcomed. Amongst the people that I was hanging out with in school, for instance, I'm not sure that the idea that we were needed was even that strong, because they didn't necessarily understand the wider political situation, that people like my father had come over because they'd been invited over. They'd been asked to come over. Of course, it was a good opportunity for him as well, but it was a two-way thing because we didn't come over, say, as refugees. So the idea that he and many other Sri Lankan professionals came over to help to keep up the National Health Service was not necessarily appreciated.
There was certainly a hostility towards immigrants who were seen as scroungers. A girl at school, I remember, once said to me, oh, you come here, you get free education, you get free healthcare, you've got it pretty good, haven't you? And she was totally ignorant in making this comment because, for one, my father was paying taxes at probably a higher rate than most of my peers' parents because he was a much higher earner. And for another, he was a doctor, so he was directly contributing to the NHS. The secondary school I went to in Birmingham was in a really poor area and the kids were from quite deprived families. And I think the social difference definitely compounded resentment towards me because there was an attitude of, why should someone who looks like you have parents with better jobs than my people? I think that they must have thought of me as somebody who was sub-British because at the end of the day, it was regarded as being an infiltrator, an interloper, somebody who was there, but probably somebody who wasn't going to be loyal to this country, wasn't going to hang around much. And so it was a case of, where do you come from and when are you going back? That was the underlying attitude.
These kinds of attitudes indicated the fears the Indigenous population had about the glory of the British nation being undermined by immigrants, especially when it came to establishments like the NHS, which was seen as a symbol of Britain's enduring greatness in the post-colonial era. Threatened by what they saw as the encroachment of their country by foreign people of an alien culture, many British people projected racist stereotypes onto South Asian migrants, revealing their ignorance.
There were many stereotypes that were imposed on us by peers at school because there was no barrier, no filter in using what today would be deemed as very racist language, the P word and mocking the way that people spoke and behaved. They assumed, I suppose, things like you would be academically high achieving, that you would be quiet, you'd keep your head down, even that you would have, say, arranged marriages, that you'd marry an Asian person, that you wouldn't be allowed to go out and socialise with like everybody else. So, yeah, there were certainly stereotypes and that you must be eating curry and that you probably smelt. All those things were assumed of you. There was also something worth mentioning, which is that within the immigrant experience, the South Asians were made up of Pakistanis, of Indians, of Bangladeshis, and of Sri Lankans. But we were all classified as one, almost like one big curry, that we were all the same as each other. And in fact, there were marked differences between the cultures. But the assumption was that we were essentially just one type of person. And when racist jokes were made, we were just expected to go along with it. And indeed, a lot of the time we did and just laugh along. We didn't know any better. And in some ways, we didn't feel it our place to stand up for ourselves in what was quite an alien country. I remember a BBC sitcom which aired in the 70s called It Ain't Half Hot Mum. It was set in British India and it had a white actor putting on an Indian accent and brown makeup to play a Sikh character. And my parents watched this really avidly and we considered it funny back then and never thought to question any of it.
Here is a clip of the show, which aired until 1981.
Oh, blimey, you're here at a very special time. Concert Party is giving one very special top hole funny show for Maharaja of Barapua. We British are knowing one secret. Our concert party is having its funny turn. One of Maharaja Saab's most loving sons is going to be very naughty and shoot his daddy.
Racial stereotypes like these remained rampant until the work of left-wing activist movements began to bear fruit. Groups such as the Asian Youth Movement advocated for political and social solidarity between all non-white people to combat racism. Their focus was on creating a cultural climate which accepted non-white people as permanent British citizens. Their slogan was, "Come what may, we're here to stay." Alongside this, efforts from white nationalist movements such as the National Front sought compulsory repatriation of Commonwealth immigrants, echoing Enoch Powell's demands. Whilst large efforts were made to temper discrimination, it remained an obstacle for South Asians living in Britain, prompting my mum to alter the way that she operated in the host nation.
Well, around the age of 16, that would have been the mid-80s, I began to distance myself from my parents. I felt I had a choice to define who I was going to be, almost as a kind of survival mechanism to fit into the culture that I was thrust into. Plus, I was genuinely growing to be quite different from my parents, who'd always felt that they'd go back to Sri Lanka eventually and never really viewed England as home. I threw myself into different art and music. I'd grown up in Birmingham, and two-tone music, that's the coming together of black and white genres, was the thing then, which I really loved and subscribed to. I remember listening to bands like The Specials and finding a safe haven. I decided to go to university in London, where I felt I'd become almost more a citizen of the world. And I think it was almost quite a conscious effort on my part not to fit into the stereotypes of what people expected of me as a South Asian, especially as a woman. I tried to distance myself from the stereotypes of passivity and meekness that had been projected onto my mother. And this, to some extent, helped to combat the cultural prejudice that I felt alongside racial prejudice.
At the same time, some media representations of South Asian women were beginning to disrupt stereotypes. The figure of the unliberated Asian housewife who was oppressed by the gender norms of her archaic culture came under scrutiny.
In the mid-80s, I remember a story that came out about a former Miss India model called Pamela Bordes, who'd had an affair with Andrew Neil, who was a well-known newspaper editor at the time. And I think this undermined conceptions that people had about Asian women being really homebound and meek. I remember a guy at university telling me that he didn't realise brown women could be so sexual until he heard about the story. So a lot of British guys at university found Asian women physically attractive, but were still ignorant about our culture. So we existed on this spectrum of either being exoticized or being seen as very meek.
Although native British perceptions of South Asians were shifting, a thread of anti-immigrant sentiment and fear of non-British culture endured in politics. Here is a clip of Margaret Thatcher, who served as Prime Minister in the 80s, expressing this.
People are really rather afraid that this country might be rather swamped by people with a different culture. And you know, the British character has done so much for democracy, for law, and done so much throughout the world, that if there's any fear that it might be swamped, people are going to react and be rather hostile to those coming in.
I think today race relations have come a long way, but racism towards South Asians still exists. It's just that people are a lot better at hiding it. So I do feel a lot less alien today compared to when I was a kid. But there are still times, especially, say, during a conflict or an unguarded moment, when you get to realise what people really think. So I've had in-laws accidentally drop the P word when they didn't realise I was there. I'd get comments about the skin colour of you and your brother, saying that they'd expected you to be a chocolate colour when you were born and marvelling at how terribly dark he was. All this happens, you see, when you really don't expect it, but it makes you realise that casual racism is bubbling underneath the surface. I think on the whole, though, British people have accepted that people like me are here to stay, but still some don't see us as fully British, and instead we're part of like a metropolitan elite living in the big cities and in a world of our own.
Thank you for listening to my mum's experiences of trying to assimilate into Britain. I hope you enjoyed and learnt something new.
You're wondering how you were there for the way you did behave. Return as far.